is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, May 3rd, 2024, the day after Sarah Langs's birthday. I'm Buster, only working from my home in Montana. Taylor Schwenk is working from the Schwenk Studios and the ESPN Studios. We kind of broke up the segments today and how we're doing it. And Taylor was happy to do that because the Orioles have taken a series from the Yankees, Taylor.
Oh, my God, a four-gamer. I was ready to be mad at you, Buster, because, you know, this game is going on while we're recording some of the podcasts and obviously, like, priorities, you know?
Right, but, you're like, shut up and get it over with, dope.
Come on, Carl Ravitch is holding us up over here. Like, what the heck, guys? We got business to attend to. But the Orioles take care of business. I mean, this is a statement win, the AL East, early on in the year, Buster.
Yeah, and Carl had some observations about the Yankees vis-a-vis the Orioles that is interesting, and I agree with him. And that this series, the resolution of this series, I think leads perfectly into our top five that we do every Friday. I have one, the Atlanta Braves. Are you still buying that?
Yes, for
okay,
sure.
Dodgers two. I think that's pretty solid. Got the Orioles three at this point. How are you feeling about that?
Much better. And we talked before the show off air that, like, I need to get better at accepting that the Orioles are actually good. I dug this number out. The Orioles are 38-21 against the AL East since last season. So.
Wow.
Everyone, I'm trying to be more positive. It's built up inside me, but this is a good Orioles team. I'm so excited about where they're headed. And this is good stuff, man.
Yep. There you are. Three, the Phillies are four and the Yankees are five. We could slip in the Guardians. And you know, we got some American League Central powerhouses that we're going to talk about on the podcast today. The bottom three, the White Sox feel cemented at number 30 right now. I know they had a good weekend series against Tampa Bay Rays, but I mean, you see what the White Sox are doing. Rockies at 29 and the Marlins at 28. We mentioned the Orioles series. They took three or four from the Yankees. And on Thursday, it was this hit that gave them a lead.
There's a line drive out to left center field. This one's going to roll for a little while. Around third comes Mountcastle. Santander getting the wave around. Westberg trying for third base. He will make it on a belly flop. It's a two-run triple for Jordan Westberg, and the Orioles have expanded their lead.
Yeah, or expanded their lead. I'm sorry, I didn't give them the lead. But, a really big series win in Camden Yards. And, Taylor, I just love the fact that most of the fans there were Oriole fans. Because, you know, we've had years in which when the Orioles were dormant, that the Yankee fans would take over Camden Yards.
Yeah, and there were still a decent amount of Yankees fans. They were still crowing online about their Let's Go Yankees chants that I guess were audible throughout the stadium. But we also, Buster, we got to give a shout to Kyle Bradish, who returned.
Yeah, that was big.
The UCL strain. Yeah, he pitched pretty well, too. A little bit of a longer first inning, but I'm definitely pleased with his first outing.
Yeah, I thought, too, because that first inning, he had a catcher interference, and I think there was a walk mixed in there, and he bounced back from that, you know, early trouble, and it was really good. It's a great first sign for him getting back in the rotation. On Wednesday, the Twins won their 10th in a row, beating the White Sox 10-5. He was the last out there.
That's taken for strike three, and it's picture time here in Chicago. 10 in a row for the Minnesota Twins. Okert sets him down in order in the ninth. The Twins come from behind, and the Minnesota Twins improve to 17-13 overall, their first undefeated road trip of six or more games, as they have won 10 straight.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. And they're in fourth place in the American League Central. As I say, we're going to be talking about that power division. Now, the big series coming up this weekend, we got the Braves against the Dodgers, Orioles going to Cincinnati face the Reds, the Rangers and Royals, defending champions playing one of the upstart teams from the American League Central, Brewers and Cubs, and on Sunday Night Baseball, we will have the Giants and the Phillies. And I told you, I teased you last week that we were going to do a cool thing on the broadcast, but I couldn't tell you what it was. We had a really cool idea for this weekend too, Taylor.
Do you have another one? This is something else that you haven't told me about?
This is something else I haven't told you about, but I'm going to, on Monday, if this all plays out, when we tape the Monday podcast on Sunday night, I think you're going to go, man, that was awesome.
Oh, man. I mean, you delivered last week with this tease, so I'm eager to see what it's all about.
All right. So last Sunday's tease was about the T-shirts that all the players and the umpires wore, wishing a happy birthday to our friend Sarah Langs. Well, Major League Baseball produced this video that they asked us on Sunday Night Baseball, our group, to participate in. And during the course of these birthday wishes, you're going to hear the voices of Juan Soto and Julio Rodriguez, Jose Ramirez. And at the end, you know, Boog Sciambi and Bruce Bochy, the Rangers manager. This is what baseball released on Thursday morning in honor of Sarah Langs' 31st birthday. Give a listen.
Happy birthday to Sarah Langs, because as she tells us all the time, birthdays are really important, and you are really important, according to everybody, and certainly our Sunday Night Baseball TV and radio crew.
Hi, Sarah. I'm just here to wish you a happy birthday. It's been unbelievable to see you working and tweeting all the stuff, all the stats. And every time when Soto homers, you right there. Like you say, baseball is the best, but I think you the best, and wishing you happy birthday to you.
Hey, Simon. Junior, we're here. I just want to say thank you for my birthday wish. And I just want to say the same to you. Happy birthday. And hopefully you have a nice day. And yes, birthdays are important.
Hey, Sarah. Just want to wish you a happy birthday. You say baseball is the best, but you know what? You're the best.
Whee! Sarah, gracias por los deseos de cumpleaños. Ahora te deseamos a ti feliz cumpleaños. Birthdays are important.
Hey, what's up, Sarah? I heard it's your birthday. I just want to stop by and say happy birthday. I wish you the best. I hope you enjoy it with your family. I hope to see you soon. Take care.
Hey, Sarah. Thank you for showing me love on my birthday. I just want to do the same for you and send you the best wishes for your birthday. Happy birthday.
As we all know, birthdays are important. And so it makes me so happy to be able to wish you a happy birthday. I hope you have a wonderful day. And I look forward to seeing you at the stadium soon.
Hey, Sarah. I just wanted to reach out and say happy birthday. And thank you for continuing to shine your light all across the nation, and thanks for loving our game the way that you do. So, happy birthday. I hope you have a great one, and we'll see you at the ballpark.
Happy birthday. Baseball is the best.
Happy birthday, Sarah. Baseball is the best.
Happy birthday, Sarah.
Even the baseball gods know that birthdays are important, and that's why last year they arranged the schedule so that I would be in New York to not only see you on your birthday, but to spend it the only way either of us would have wanted to, watching baseball together. Happy birthday, Slangs.
We love you. We all think baseball is the best. We also think you're the best. We love you. Hope it's an amazing birthday, all right?
Love you, Sarah.
Love you.
Love you.
And happy birthday, Sarah. We do love you.
So that was pretty cool, Taylor, huh?
Oh my God, the names, the faces that jumped out of the screen to me, I was shocked. I mean, like Fernando Tatis Jr., for example. I mean, you know, Sarah Langs is close personal friends with Julio Rodriguez and Bruce Bochy, so not a huge surprise, but I mean, just so cool to see the love that she's getting, you know, from all angles. Like, what a birthday she's having.
Absolutely. All right, what else you got?
Buster, we'll keep promoting the MBA programs over here, the Hoop Collective and the Low Post. General recording late night after these games. Could get some good like on-site stuff for the Eastern Conference Finals if we get a Boston-New York series. So keep an eye out on that. The Hoop Collective and the Low Post on this podcasting platform and YouTube.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Rabbit on Baseball Tonight.
Carl Rabbit, Rabbit Train, play-by-play man on Sunday Night Baseball. Rabbit, how you doing?
I'm good. Can you see I got the old Soul Series sweatshirt on first day? It's about 60 degrees here, so I figured I'd throw that on, and it's it's comfortable. It was an amazing experience, though. I'm showing off the Soul Series stuff right now.
Very nice. Looking very good. Also saw you, heard you in that in the happy birthday video that Major League Baseball disseminated for Sarah Langs. We had so much fun in Bruce Bochy's office taping that birthday message. It was your idea to have that to have it arranged so we have all the Sunday Night Baseball people on radio, television are there. And after you get done talking, Book Shambi gets done talking, we step out of the way and there's her good friend, Bruce Bochy.
Exactly. What's behind what? Let's make a deal. What's behind door number two? Oh, it's the manager of the Texas Rangers and longtime Sarah friend, Bruce Bochy. That was great. I'll be honest. What Major League Baseball did with that video. I mean, I broke down at the end of it. I think the outpouring of support for her is just warranted and so incredible and so professional. And people, you know, around the sport for a lot of reasons, but because they like her and love her, know what the birthday means and every birthday that she has. So I was really blown away. And like I said, I was in tears. That was, it was really, really well done and so well deserved. And God, I wish we didn't have to do anything like that.
Yeah, you're 100% right. She's going to be coming up in a minute. I'm going to give her a chance to respond to that video, but I'm also going to give her a hard time. When I brought up the fact that that had been posted on social media during our Zoom prep conference call for Sunday Night Baseball, did you hear how sternly she talked to me? Like, I'm not focused on that. I'm focused on this.
It's work. Yep. And that's why she is who she is. We have a job to do, whether it's school, baseball. That was so very typical, Sarah. And I wish you had pushed it a little bit. Like, no, let's all watch this, Sarah. Let's all watch it together. But nope, she was having none of it. I'm here. I'm giving numbers. And again, for people who don't, you talk about pulling the curtain back. She talked. We talked on that call about fathers and sons, right? And we were talking about Jung-ho Lee and his dad. And then there was some other context. And she, again, had done some research on the WBC and remembered Cal and Paul Quantrill, right? Is that what it was?
Something like that. Yeah,
something like that. And you know, people on the call were like, geez, it's amazing, Sarah, you know, that you know that. And, you know, for people like me, it's not that she knows it. It's that she remembered it. I mean, she pulled it. She just literally, like, her mind is such a sponge. And that's the part that blows me away about people like Sarah, like Tim Kirkchin, I'm sure like yourself, this incredible recall. Like, that is just not something I was born with, and they are just unbelievable. They are a Rolodex, and it's almost like you can see the wheel spinning. Stop on Cal and Paul Quantrill, and let's spit it out. It's unbelievable.
It was a funny call. All right. We were talking on the call about the Phillies and the Giants. We have them on Sunday Night Baseball from Philadelphia this weekend. Look, I'm feeling good, Carl. I said this in the podcast earlier in the week. I'm feeling good about my choice of the Phillies to win the World Series. They are rolling.
Yeah, I know. And a couple of years ago, I think I was sort of, you know, I was on the Phillies and it didn't turn out that way. And this year, I don't know why. It's not as if I've ignored them. I think they're as good a chance as anybody, but it's like the Braves and the Dodgers for some reason, and maybe just recency bias. But yeah, I mean, if you know, we talked about this in the call, if you just almost go position by position with the Braves and the Phillies, you know, now that Harper's at first base, like, he and Olsen are just all-star players. You go to second base, and Stotts becomes such a great player, and Albies, and Turner at shortstop, and third base. Like, Alec Bohm's risen his game up. He may not be Austin Riley. Yeah, may not be Austin Riley, but my God, he's in that conversation. So, yeah, they're incredibly similar. The starting staffs are where they should be. It's a great team, and you know Dombrowski, similar to Alex Anthopoulos. And I'm sure similar to Los Angeles and what they'll do, and Brandon Gomes, like they're gonna be there. They're gonna make moves. It's Mike Petriello said in our call, it's not the big two. It should be the big three in the National League.
Oh, without a doubt. The big question for me is which one, you know, has to go through the extra round of playoffs, because you know the Phillies and the Braves will make the playoffs. who will have to go through an extra round. And does it make a difference? Because the last exactly. 2 years, the Braves have had the bye and then they've gotten knocked out. So, no, I you know, the thing that really struck me, too, in preparing for this weekend was how much better the Phillies are defensively than a couple of years ago when we were making fun of them. Like
Kyle Schwarber was out there. It was not good.
No, yeah. Kyle Schwarber isn't the up. And now you have Bryce Harper, who's a plus defender so far. Yep. Trey Turner has been better defensively this year. Alec Boehm has improved. You got Rojas in the outfield instead of Kyle Schwarber. It is a really good defensive team and significantly better than they were a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and that's so critical. You know, Wheeler is a strikeout guy. It feels like Nola's trending towards being a pitcher for the long term who's going to pitch to contact. Ranger Suarez keeps the ball on the ground and is having an unbelievable season. And those, you know, those outs that you need to turn into outs instead of giving extra outs are so huge. You know, the bullpen, I always think they'll figure out, similar to the Rangers last year. I'm not overly worried about that. I had a conversation with somebody from Baltimore and they were worried about their bullpen. That is a position and a part of the rotation you can, and pitching staff, you can figure out. So I like the Phillies a lot. They're athletic. They're fun to watch. I mean, that's, you know, there are boring teams and then there are teams that are fun to watch. The Phillies are fun to watch. The Giants recognized, I think, he's a little boring here, and they've kind of done things to address it. And obviously Young-Ho Lee is another guy that gives you something to look forward to because of his bat to ball skills and his ability to run. So that Sunday night should be an exciting game.
Yeah, much more watchable Giants team. I know the last couple of years, because we'd go in there and you'd be looking at all the platoons and you didn't know who was going to be in the game in the fifth inning, and
right.
you didn't know who was going to be starting. And we get Logan Webb, who's one of the best starting pitchers in the National League, and you have this improved lineup with guys like Lee and with Chapman and Soler. And the Giants, as Paul Hembekides has said on the podcast before, he thinks that this is a team that will emerge as those late signings begin to manifest. I want to look back a little bit to the last Sunday night game. I wanted to see if you had the same impression that I did. I walked away from watching the Red Sox over the weekend saying, you know what, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs, but they're better than what I thought they were.
Yeah, it's funny. I think the Red Sox, it's one of those teams where it feels like Alex is managing them really well. It feels like some of the players that we didn't know about, like, well, you're Abreu's, better than you thought.
Yeah.
Clearly the pitching has gotten way better. And I know I left there thinking, is this going to be a year? And I asked Alex this privately. I said, is this like going to be the year that you wonder if our guys didn't get hurt, like, did we have a legitimate chance? I don't know that they're able to withstand a long-term Casas injury. Like, those are things I don't know, because they don't have a lot of the depth that other teams do. But yeah, like they're good. They're kind of a pain in the butt team to play. They're better defensively than they've been. They seem to have guys that can come through in the clutch. Duran's getting better, but you know, Devers gets hurt. The pitching staff loses guys. And Casas was such an important player. Can they survive that? Can they hang around? Because I'm sure if you talk to Booney or Brandon Hyde, or anybody that faces them, it's almost like what Bochy told us about the A's. Like, don't let the A's get hot and come in here. And we all were like, wait, what, the A's? Like, turned out he may be right. And I think people will feel that way about the Red Sox unless the health really, really takes them down.
So I remember that Sunday night game this past weekend, I think also because it was like the first little window into the personality of Shota Imanaga, who did an in-game interview with us.
Right.
Since then, okay. He had a great outing in Citi Field against the Mets. And all of a sudden you look up and his numbers are very similar to another rookie left-hander, Fernando Valenzuela, in his first year as a starting pitcher. 34 and two-thirds innings for Imanaga so far. 3 earned runs, 2 home runs allowed, 4 walks, 35 strikeouts, 0.78 ERA. And he's got just enough funk, Carl. He kind of reminds me a little bit of, you remember Sid Fernandez used to pitch with the Mets.
Sure.
Where he felt like
sure.
he was throwing uphill with that yep. fastball. He's beating hitters at the top of the zone. He's really interesting.
Yeah, all-star Nestor Cortez. He reminds me of him only, if nothing else, stature. I mean, they're both kind of short guys. There's nothing that you look at and be like, we're going to get destroyed here. We're not going to catch up to the fastball. And yet seemingly nobody can square up his fastball, which is 90 or 91 at the top of the zone. And when he needs a ground ball, he buries it in the ground. I remember Alex Cora was talking about him, and some of the hitters would go back and other hitters would say, so what did you see? What do you got? And the question became, how do you get on top of the fastball? And, you know, the hitters basically said, well, you swing at it like you would an axe. You have to somehow come down on the top of the baseball in order to square it up. It stays up. He's been incredibly impressive. He's personable. He's fun. It started out that way with his introduction to the Cubs and his opening press conference. The idea that he's willing to do that during a game and go through and interpret, it's wonderful. It's a great, great story. And look, anybody that's willing to share their time and give us a little insight into who they are and what makes them so successful, it endears me to him, and I know it does all the baseball fans. It's a great thing.
Orioles take 3 out of 4 from the Yankees. What's your takeaway from that series?
Yeah, it's just another impressive, showing by Baltimore. Another reminder that maybe the Rays take a step back this year, and the Orioles maybe take even another step forward off of last year, and they were dominant. This is not a Giancarlo Stanton bashing, but there was a, I think it might have been game one or two on a ball hit to the outfield. Yep. He gets thrown out trying to run to second on a ball that wasn't caught on a force play. And you're like, look, the Yankees just are, they're the older, more mature team. And that's not always a good thing in Major League Baseball. And the Orioles are young, they're brash. And it's not collectively, it's individually, like the Orioles just are younger than the Yankees are. They're able to handle things. They're faster than the Orioles are, than the Yankees. The question is, does that over 162 matter? It certainly wouldn't matter in a 7-game series. I think it matters more over the course of a season when you're trying to win close games, and you're going to need some speed and you're going to need some guys to stay healthy. It's just like watching a younger, better version of a really good Yankee team. They just felt older watching that series.
Yeah, I remember when those late 90 Yankee teams emerged. It was actually in a series against the Orioles in the 96 playoffs. And you had the Orioles with Cal Ripken, who was older at that time, and, Rafael Palmeiro. And they lost to a team of the Yankees that had a young Derek Jeter and a young Bernie Williams. And the Yankee team felt younger and more athletic. They were just coming in. And you're exactly right. When the Orioles are playing now, it feels like that they have a big speed advantage. And it will be interesting to see as DJ LeMahieu, another older player, comes back into the lineup, exactly how they adjust during the course of the year.
So, I will say this, and I don't know if you agree, Buster, but the play of Anthony Volpe does remind me of Derek Jeter, because now he's kind of making those plays that Jeter would make. And you're like, wow.
Oh, he makes plays Jeter couldn't make. Like,
he's such a polished player. Like I get the whole thing. I get the, hey, you don't want to go to was it Vanderbilt he was going to go to?
Yes.
Yeah. You don't want to go to, if you want to be the shortstop of the Yankees and give the Yankees credit, because they saw something and boy, it certainly feels like he is that guy for the long term. It's really neat to see.
Yeah. I don't know which broadcast you were watching. You live in the Northeast, but I've been watching the Orioles broadcast. And to hear Jim Palmer go on and on and on about how good Volpe is defensively, this is someone who played in front of Mark Belanger and other great shortstops. And so when he's complimenting him the way that he was, you're like, yeah, Anthony Volpe is an impact player. And
he is. And he's young. He is one of the young guys.
Yeah. If this was hockey, you'd have an A on his jersey, because we got the C out in Judge, and Volpe will be the next one after him. Yeah. I want to ask you about this play that happened in the Cubs game against the Mets on Wednesday. Pete Alonso is thrown out at the plate to end the game. Give a listen.
Now the 1-2. McNeil hits one in the air to left. Angling toward the line. Hap makes the catch. Alonso tags. Here comes the throw. The relay home is in time. Beautiful play by Nick Madrigal.
This is a great play at the plate if it stays. What the Mets are going to do is they're going to question this, whether the plate gets blocked at home. That is going to be what they're going to question, and I'm sure they are going to review this.
All right. So on that play, as you know, the Mets challenged the call, and the replay center looked at it, and they determined that Amaya did not block home plate, and Pete Alonso was out. And as you know, Carlos Mendoza, the Mets manager, just lost his mind, which I don't blame him, but I also kind of like the home plate blocking rule is such, Carl, that I think you could probably have 20 different umpires in there, and they might give you 20 different interpretations.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at it. You know, Rex Chapman, the former Kentucky Wildcat, had that thing on social media years ago, block or charge. And
right.
It became things you could see in a supermarket parking lot when a shopping cart is running loose and it hits the car. Is that a block or a charge? And he made light of the whole thing. It's so nuanced. I agree with you. That was my take. Like, you could easily see 20 different opinions about it. My first opinion about it was that it was a block, but his hand got in there and his hand came up and it never slapped the base. So it wasn't fully a block. The ball took the catcher there, but I think Amaya was going there anyway in an effort to kind of block the plate. So it's such an impossible call to make. But I do see from that third base replay that I think the Mets telecast had, he was shaded towards the infield. He caught the ball and then went to a knee, which is legal. But boy, it was awfully close.
Yeah, the where he set up with his foot on home plate, you know, I know that the ruling was that Alonso had an avenue to the base. I don't know if he did. Probably wasn't the best choice to go in head first either.
Feet first is a better idea.
All right, and last one for you. I was looking at the standings this morning and thinking, how incredible would it be, and this possibility exists based on the current standings, that we would have four American League Central teams in the playoffs, okay? when you're talking about the Twins on this winning streak lately, the Tigers, of course, the Guardians who lead the division, the Kansas City Royals behind them, they have all four of those teams have better records than any team in the American League West, which have the Astros, the Rangers, the Mariners.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, this is one of those starts to the year. And now that you're into, you know, May, you certainly can look at it with a little bit more clarity. Of those four teams, you know, Cleveland has played well, certainly the last few years, and tend to be a playoff team and a division winner. Kansas City is the team that feels like, with Reagans and with Witt Jr., that they have as much staying power in that race as the other two do. I love the talent on Minnesota, and to me, Detroit is probably the one that if I were to maybe look at for the next 5 years, I'd put them in that conversation. With Kansas City, I just don't know that they're there yet, but they're playing like they're there, and there's so much to like about their young talent and their pitching. But I'm in on the Guardians, and I'm in on the Royals, and I hadn't thought that. And I guess time will tell about Houston. They're sort of the wild card to me in all this. Can they get right? Do they have the ability to come back? Is this the bad month and the next 5 months are really good, and then they're going to be in the playoff chase, or is it not? I don't know the answer to that.
No, it's a really deep hole that the Astros are in right now, and it's too bad. You know, Minnesota has been on this winning streak despite the fact they don't have Royce Lewis. Carlos Correa just came back from missing 16 games, and now Byron Buxton goes out with a knee injury. They just cannot keep those three guys on the field together, so we'll see how that goes. All right, I will see you in Philadelphia, Carl.
Hi, Buster. Look forward to it. See you, buddy.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com, who on her birthday is where, Sarah?
I'm at Citi Field, of course, in the press box talking to you during a baseball game on my birthday, which is absolutely perfect.
Exactly. Now, I got to tell a backstory from earlier today. We had a Sunday night baseball Zoom prep call. And in the middle of that, I got a text from someone in Major League Baseball forwarding me the video, Sarah, of all these major leaguers wishing you a happy birthday. Juan Soto and Julio Rodriguez and Garrett Cole and Jose Ramirez and Bruce Bochy. And I mentioned it when I saw it. And I asked you, hey, have you seen the video? And you were very stern with me. And you said something along the lines of, I got to focus on this call. And you did not want to look at it.
Well, I did not mean to be that stern. But as I told you on the call, I was focused. I was doing what I was doing. And I hadn't seen it because it went on social media during a very important weekly meeting. So I'm glad I didn't watch it until afterward, because it would have been way too emotional. You all would have known I was watching instead of talking to all of you on that call.
Yeah, it was. I'll have to tell you the backstory of the choreography for what we did. So MLB asked us to, you know, the Sunday night group, the radio and television group, to do some sort of happy birthday wishes for you. And then, you know, I just was thinking about the fact that we were going to be around the Rangers. And I'm like, I know Bruce Bochy's going to want to get involved in this. And it was Carl Ravage's idea. He said, hey, how about we all line up in the front, and then Boch emerges from the back to give you a big salute. And he did it in one take, Sarah.
I mean, it was incredible. I really appreciate seeing all of you guys. And then in the end, it comes back to you and they're wondering what's going to happen. And all of a sudden, there's Boch. Amazing idea, and I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is eight. We'll go with eight for the number of home runs that L.A. De La Cruz hit in the month of April. He also had 17 stolen bases. That made him the first player with at least that many home runs and stolen bases in a calendar month since at least 1901. Nobody else has had that combo or higher. And of course, I'm always looking ahead. So, I mean, he did that in April. What's he going to do in May, June, and so on? So only five players spent multiple calendar months with five home runs and 15 stolen bases. So just rounder numbers. The guys who do that are Ricky Henderson three times, Barry Bonds twice, Eric Davis twice, Joe Morgan twice, and Lou Brock twice. But the only one of those I mentioned who did it twice in a single season was Eric Davis, which is amazing because L.A. De La Cruz wears his number 44 with the Reds. So if he joins him with Iovine, he will. It would be a really, really cool symmetry.
Number two.
Number two is 078. So, as we mentioned, I was busy field. I missed, unfortunately, Shohei Minaga by one day. He pitched on Wednesday night. It was spectacular yet again. He now has an 078 earned run average. That is the fourth lowest ERA in the pitcher's first six career starts since earned runs became official in both leagues, which is 1913. We have 1981 Fernando Valenzuela and a minuscule 033 ERA. Lee Paris in 1945 at 050 and Bob Schrock in 1913 at 075. And again, this is his first six-year source. Those are the first six home run on the Major League Baseball mound. Of course, Fernando pitched a little bit the year prior. Just incredible what he has done. And I love seeing his personality on playing baseball with us on Sunday and again in his post-game presser on Wednesday.
Number one.
Number one is 1,000. So this is something that you know, I plan in advance, so if I come on the base set, I won't talk to Buster about that. But if you would ask me on Wednesday, hey, are you going to have a start to tell Marte and Chris Taylor, I would say absolutely not. When each of them on Wednesday in Arizona playing their 1,000th career MLB game, it was the fifth time in MLB history the two players reached the 1,000th game in the same Major League game, but it was the first time that the two were opponents. And the amazing part about this to me is that anyone who's a Mariners fan might remember that Lisa were in the Marines organization that was staying out. And in fact, when Seattle called Gisele Marte up for his major league debut on July 31st, 2015, the player they sent down was Chris Taylor, who had been struggling with their low shortstop at the time. And they sent him down. And to me, it's just amazing story of perseverance. Here they are, despite such different tasks, playing in their soccer game in the exact same game. And so, I mean, I'm chilled. I've known this for 24 hours, and I still have chills talking about it.
Yeah, that's an absolutely incredible coincidence. All right, before we go, we know you're at Citi Field now. When you leave the ballpark from this afternoon game, what are you going to do for the rest of your birthday?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, well, let's see. I have a weekly test where I write for MLB.com, so I'll make sure that's all ready to go. I'll work on my notes that I was sending you guys for our Sunday baseball game. You know, we only have one evening game, but I'll watch that evening with food until I watch some basketball as well.
Well, there you go. It sounds like you're doing exactly what you want to do, Sarah. Happy birthday. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you again.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America or all around the world. Todd, how you doing?
Buster, I'm fine. And I would be remiss, I know we want to start out with something else, if I did not say happy birthday to our dear friend and colleague, Sarah Langs, because baseball is the best. She is the best, as everybody has been saying. So it's a special day.
Yeah, it's been really cool on social media to see the outpouring of greetings that she's getting, because she's someone who, she just loves birthdays. So for her to get that sort of response from you and others is so cool. Thank you. Now, as we get started, just a peek behind the curtain, you know, you pop up on Zoom here and today you have an Angels cap. And my first thought when I saw that was, you know, I bet you that's got something to do with Mike Trout being hurt this week. And as it turned out, that's exactly what was going on. So earlier this week, Stephen A. Smith had this thought on Mike Trout and his extensive absences over the last 4 years.
Well, it's driving me crazy. And let me tell you this. Mike Trout is a sensational player when he's healthy. One of the greatest. He really, really is. And I'm a huge, huge fan. But I've grown disgusted with his lack of availability. It makes me question, I know he looks the part. What the hell are you doing to take care of yourself? Always injured. I mean, damn, it's baseball. I mean, what are you talking about here? It's not football, it's not boxing, it's not
the UFC. You're not running up and down the court 94 feet basketball for 82 nights a year. It's baseball. Half the time, y'all out standing out in the outfield, you know, chewing on pumpkin seeds or something, waiting for a fly ball to come your way. How the hell is he always hurt?
Stephen A., come on. Like, and I say that, like, first off, the sport is a lot more physical than what he's portraying it as. But on top of that, just knowing Mike Trout, Todd is dying to play. Like, he craves baseball the way that when you were a kid, me, it was Little League Park. Like, I mean, he just lives for that. And so to see in his face the other day as he was talking to reporters about how he had suffered this knee injury, you could see he was heartbroken. And so he gets his random series of injuries over the last 4 years that are basically unrelated. I'm like, come on, Stephen A., what'd you think?
Buster, I'm not sure what was worse, Stephen A.'s hot take on Mike Trout or his ceremonial first pitch last year at Yankee Stadium.
Oh, man.
That's all I'm going to say. And we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, but I
appreciate poor Mike Trout, all of baseball. I don't care who you root for. I don't care if you're a media pro like you. If he is not playing the game, we're all diminished. And it's a shame. I feel terrible.
Yeah, people always ask me, you know, who do you root for? And I always say, you know, I root for interesting games and I root for good stuff to happen to good people. And he's one of those people. Like, he's a good guy and he really does care. And it's breaking his heart that he's not on the field. He's gone out and apologized to people in the organization because he suffered these injuries. There's nothing. If you're hurt, you're hurt. You tear your meniscus. What are you going to do? All right, let's get to this week's Ballpark and Beyond.
Buster, today we are traveling to Wagner Avenue in the bucolic small town of Fleischmann's, New York, located in the Catskill Mountains, about 135 miles northwest of New York City. We are visiting the historic Mountain Athletic Club grounds, which served as sort of a private field of dreams for brothers Julius and Max Fleischmann, heirs to the Fleischmann yeast family. They were also sportsmen and avid baseball fans. Max was at one time an owner of the Cincinnati Reds and Philadelphia Phillies, and Julius served two terms as mayor of their native Cincinnati. Their family had vacationed in the Catskills from the time that the brothers were kids, and in 1895, they decided to create a baseball field unlike any other. The Catskills population swelled during the summer months, served by grand hotels that afforded clean air and a pristine setting. The brothers purchased and cleared 4 acres in what was then called Griffin Corners and developed a baseball field whose setting was idyllic, a perfectly manicured diamond located on the side of a mountain paired with some of the finest baseball facilities in the country, featuring a spacious, refined clubhouse and 3 dressing rooms. Its capacity would soon reach 5,000. The brothers' summertime diversion became known as the NAC Grounds, and vacationing tourists flock there to see the Mountain Athletic Club, a.k.a. the Mountain Tourists, a team composed of amateurs and pros who the Fleischmanns pampered and paid handsomely to play ball, playing alongside the brothers. They funded all club expenses and salaries and guaranteed upwards of $150 to visiting clubs. In 1899, the club took to the road, traveling in parlor cars that the newspapers would make National League teams envious. Somewhere upwards of a dozen future and former MLB players played for the MAC along the way, including future Hall of Famer Miller Huggins and quite possibly Honus Wagner, as well as 3 future members of the 1906 world champion Chicago White Sox. In 1900, the club traveled to Cincinnati and defeated the Reds in a charity exhibition game. They went 56-4 that year. Three years later, they played a home game against the Cuban Giants, black baseball's first pro club. The brothers' interest shifted elsewhere as the new century rolled along, and in 1914, Julius Fleischmann sold the grounds to the village for the nominal sum of $1, quote, upon the condition that this property shall always be used for a public park and athletic purposes and no other purpose, that it shall never be sold or sublet, that it shall always be free of access to the public at large, and that they shall always keep the property in good condition. The village, very grateful village, renamed itself Fleischmann's, and the park was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 2020 its 125th anniversary. Go see a vintage baseball game there. It's this week's stop on our season-long journey to the ballpark and beyond.
I'd never heard of that before I saw your entry. How did you hear about that first, Todd?
Well, Buster, the research that I do to this segment or, you know, for this segment or any of our other segments, you know, you get the low-hanging fruit, the stuff that sounds interesting, and then you dig down into these rabbit holes and you find stories that maybe not a whole lot of people are familiar with. And this was a big deal. The Mountain Athletic Club grounds and just pictures of this place look unbelievable. You have to think of Field of Dreams and these two brothers who created their own Field of Dreams and played alongside these ball players.
Yeah, it reminds me, you know, the story Roy Oswalt grew up in Mississippi and his high school didn't have a baseball field. So his dad, Billy, rolled in with a bulldozer and made a baseball field. Okay, for the high school. That's so it's, and I don't know if that field still exists, but I didn't know about this story. That would be cool. I think there might be a time when, as you know, I spent a week with family up in upstate New York. Be fun to roll over there and see what it looks like. I wonder how, you know, what kind of condition it's in right now.
Well, it was deeded to forever be preserved as a public park, so I'm sure it's pretty nice. And I believe there are some historic markers there, but I want to look and find some other imagery and send it your way. And maybe we'll blast it out on the socials.
Yeah, that sounds great. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
Speaking of ballparks, Buster, Sutter Health Park, the future home of the Oakland Athletics, seats 14,000 fans. It's going to be interesting. So here's this week's question. The current average capacity for all MLB parks is 41,978. Which ballpark comes closest to this average number, which is an average ballpark capacity among these clubs? Is it A, the Oakland Coliseum? Is it B, Wrigley Field? Is it C, Progressive Field? Or is it D, City Field? Closest to the median of 41,978, Oakland Coliseum, Wrigley, Progressive Field in Cleveland, or City Field?
Taylor?
I feel like this whole Wrigley Field, I feel like that's either, you know, trying to throw us off the scent. It's not the obvious answer. I'll go City Field.
That's what I was going to say.
Wow. You're both brilliant young men because you are both correct, but it was close. City Field officially this season, at least, seats 41,922. Guys, I was sort of shocked. Wrigley now seats 41,649. That seems like a lot.
That's higher than I thought.
Yeah,
that is definitely higher than I thought. I was thinking more like 39 plus. And so 41,000, that's interesting that it was that close. I thought it was fairly clear delineation. You know, I knew Progressive had taken their seating down a few years ago.
Yeah.
So, that's interesting. I didn't know Wrigley Field was over 40,000.
Tropicana Field with 25,000, last in the majors, at least for now.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. Oh, boy. That's a topic for another day.
Thanks for joining us, Todd.
What's the Coliseum?
The Oakland Coliseum currently seats 46,847 with a lot of tarping off up there. And clearly they're not going to come close.
Yeah. And with a lot of empty seats and a lot of tarping off. That's for sure. All right, Todd, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Friday. Bleacher Tweets are brought to you by DirecTV. Get the best of live sports and streaming together. No satellite dish required. Now stream DirecTV satellite free. You can call the Bleacher Tweets voicemail line at 406-404-8460. You can email the show, bleachertweets@gmail.com, or reach out on Twitter, hashtag Bleacher Tweets. Let's go to the voicemail.
Hey, Buster. Hey, Taylor. Andrew Marshall here from Traverse City, Michigan. Just listening to Cameron Maben on Wednesday talk about hitters being happy coming out of April with a 250 average got me thinking and wondering, when is the earliest or latest management may make drastic changes to their roster? Is perhaps Memorial Day the day where teams are considering changes? Or is it possibly earlier or later? April just seems way too early to make any drastic changes with such a small sample size in the season. Thanks a lot, guys. Keep up the great work, and happy birthday to Sarah Langs.
Well, that's pretty cool. Thank you, Andrew. And that was a great question. I really think that we're entering that period right now. And that's, of course, a generalization based on a lot of years of conversations with general managers where they talk about how they want to get at least a month, 6 weeks in before they can really evaluate their team. Now, we've seen extreme examples the other way where teams, you know, I mean, Jackson Holliday, he was called up, you know, the Orioles watched him really struggle and decide, hey, it's time to make a change quickly. But generally speaking, it's about 4 to 6 weeks. Now, I would say if you are, for example, the general manager of the Marlins, you're probably already ready to communicate to other teams. Look, it appears that unless we have a major turnaround, we're probably going to be sellers at the deadline. There's still some time, though, for teams like the Blue Jays to find their traction, I think.
Hi, Buster. This is Al Reese from Buffalo, New York. Thanks to you and Taylor for a great show. I've been listening for 10 years now. Fact or fiction? Because of his multiple injuries over the past few years and his advancing age, Mike Trout's days as an elite difference-making player are over.
Boy, I'm not ready to co-sign that, so I'm going to say fiction. Because what we saw before he got hurt was he was on a pace to hit about 50 homers this year. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. He was on a pace to steal like 45 bases. So I'm not ready to buy into that. You know, I would say I did a radio appearance earlier today, and I mentioned that sadly it feels like Trout is on the same trajectory as guys like Mickey Mantle and Ken Griffey Jr., where we talked about how great they were, but we also talk about, boy, what if they hadn't suffered this injury, or what if this – they'd been able to have, you know, great seasons all the way through.
Hi, Buster. This is Danny Norlander from upstate New York, and I'm calling with a question about the Washington Nationals. At the time I'm calling, they have a record of 15-15, which is better than 13 teams in Major League Baseball. They're actually tied with the Mets for the 16th best record in baseball. What do you credit for their performance being better than most folks expected at the start of the season? What do they have to do to move up in those power rankings? Because week after week, they're sitting in the same spot.
And that's true. You know, I know when I fill out my power rankings, there's sometime like I haven't moved Oakland like in the top half. And it's going to take me a while to really believe they're going to last. With Washington, I think they're gaining credibility. You know, they went down into the tank and now they're coming back up after acquiring, you know, some really great young players. That Juan Soto deal is paying off for them. C.J. Abrams is seemingly blossoming into a star. Mike Rizzo is clearly very good at identifying young talent. You know, that's something he's always thrived in. And I think that if they continue along here for the next couple of weeks, yeah, they're going to start getting credit.
All right, let's go through a couple of emails. Michael Brown writes in, "Hi, I'm the seller that sold cards to PK. Love the podcast. Always listen. Sometimes I get behind, but have never missed an episode. Not one. I don't tweet and I have no idea how to do it." Michael Brown, he writes in that he had a brick and mortar card shop in Hebron, Indiana from 1993 to 95. He does all sorts of online sales. When he saw PK's name, he had to ask him. And then he also says that Andrew McCutchen is not a Hall of Famer, Hall of Very Good, and he thinks that Thurman Munson should be in the Hall of Fame. So good to hear from Michael, this little closing the loop on this story between him and PK.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I love that. I would agree with you about Andrew McCutchen. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer yet. Thurman Munson, I think, is, you know, the other players are being inducted. I think Thurman Munson has a better chance, especially having been an elite catcher.
We have Ayumu Hashiba writes in, "A big Baseball Tonight podcast fan living in Japan, fan of the Rockies, listening to every episode. Can't wait to visit Camden Yards this summer. Very excited for you."
Nice.
His question: we don't hear any buzz about Nolan Arenado these days. What do you think is an issue with him? He should be happy playing out of Colorado with no worries. Is he going to demand a trade to a winning team again because his team is not quite competitive back-to-back years? Thanks. Love you all.
Yeah, he was going through some hitting issues early in the year. He's been, you know, he made an adjustment. He's been swinging the bat better of late. He's not really in a position to demand a trade because he had a down year last year, slow start. And remember, I can't remember the exact figure. I think it's like $34 million a year. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be able to demand a trade unless he steps up and performs a lot better. Somebody else is not going to be rushing to do that. There was a lot of speculation in the industry last year that maybe Nolan would wind up, kind of pushing his way to the Dodgers, but I don't think that's in the front burner.
Mm. Next email from Clayton Richeson. He writes, "Hey, Buster and Taylor, longtime listener, first-time tweeter. I'm a big Cardinals fan. These past few seasons have caused us to be more bipolar than ever. We win 3 games in a row, and we may never lose again. We lose the finale of a series, and it's time for Marmol, DeWitt, everyone to go. My question, who has the most bipolar fan base in Major League Baseball, and who is the most justified?" Got to be the Yankees, right? I feel like they are so reactionary, but that's the easy answer.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like that any of the big market teams are kind of at a disadvantage because they have more fans on which we would judge.
Mm-hmm.
Let me think about that. I'm looking at the list of teams and just thinking bipolar fan bases. The Yankees are definitely a candidate because last year they wanted to run everybody out on a rail. You don't really hear much about them firing everybody that they went to. Yeah, I guess it would be the Yankees, right? I mean, doesn't feel like, and I know, if Juan Soto, like, let's say, went into a week-long slump in his next game at Yankee Stadium, he struck out 4 times, he would get booed. Aaron Judge got booed, for God's sake.
They booed Aaron Judge. Insane.
Yeah.
Let's go to Steve Jennings, who is works at the University of Colorado. He's in the Department of Geography and Environmental Studies. He writes in, "I have a question about the ability of the Rockies to ever become a contender for a postseason run." Basically saying that, is it possible for them to be contenders because of the way the ball travels through the park? And I didn't know this, Coors Field has the largest outfield in the majors.
That's right. And I think it's an open question. You know, for years, the front office there have tried to solve this, because what you get, Taylor, a lot is just day after day after day of negative reinforcement for pitching. And so you could be a pitcher and you could throw a great game, but with more space in the outfield, you could wind up allowing 8 hits and 5 runs and no one would know the difference. And it's part of the reason why free agents don't go there. It's part of the reason why you don't see, star pitchers developing with the Rockies. I think it's every start they make, the conditions under which they pitch are just harder. And I don't know the answer to that question, but to this point, no one, 30 years in, no one's found a formula for them to compete every year.
I'm going to continue lobbying for Sarah Langs to be the next GM of the Colorado Rockies.
There you go.
Let's go to the tweets. Billy Flanagan writes in, he wants to talk Tigers, 62nd on the Detroit Tigers. They're playing okay. We don't have to talk 60 seconds on them. That's a long time.
They are playing well. And, I think I related this story talking with AJ Hinch in spring training and him feeling like with the young players they have on their roster, if their position players evolved this year and they got better and they got more offense, he felt that they would have enough pitching to contend. And that's exactly what's going on. You know, they have a plus 10 run differential. Think about a world, Taylor, in which we might see, it's possible, I don't think it's going to happen, it's possible you could see 4 American League Central teams in the playoffs. How crazy would that be?
The rapture's next, Buster, if that happens.
I know, exactly.
All right, let's hold our breath here. Amy Chapman wrote in about Xfinity removing Bally Sports from the channels that they carry. Have you heard anything about Major League Baseball getting involved with this?
No. I think they have to, it's an incredibly complicated topic. And I think that they are bystanders to a large degree, because they've sold the rights and now it's a fight between the different companies. And I think in this particular case, my sense is that they're just not in a position to really do much.
Alrighty, Buster. That's it for Bleacher Tweets. Thanks for calling in, everyone. Thanks for writing in. We'll do a couple shout outs here because I get sad that we can't include all the voicemails due to time constraints. So Derek Amon, Cubs fan in Westchester, New York, Trevor Bennett in Utah, Jared Smith in Minneapolis. Happy birthday to Landon and Atlanta's dad. He's a big fan of the show. Steven in Atlanta, Jack Schurer from Kohler, Wisconsin, Paul Rickoff, a Texan Cubs fan in New York City, and Brad Barber from Peoria, Illinois. Thanks for reaching out, everyone. We'll see you next week.
That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah Langs. Happy birthday one more time, Sarah, hope it's a great birthday. And to Carl Ravitch and to Todd Radom and, of course, to Taylor Schwenk. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.